It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com.
It's Daimler Chrysler's turn.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. GM and Ford have told us how they plan to turn things around. Today, Daimler Chrysler unveils its restructuring blueprint. We already know a little bit about it, like the company will probably close a couple plants, and perhaps 10,000 workers will lose their jobs. Lisa Roth has more.
It's been almost 10 years since Mercedes-Benz and Chrysler merged, but when it comes to actually building cars, the two companies are still pretty separate. Auto analyst John Cassessa says the restructuring could force them to start sharing parts, designs, and even factories. He says the companies that succeed at this make their higher-end brands worth the extra cost.
By offering superior technology and good performance and still take advantage of the common resources they have in these companies.
Big job cuts and plant closings in 2001 helped Daimler Chrysler survive until now. But Cassessa says today it's in the same trouble as its crosstown rivals GM and Ford.
They've sold all their non-core assets. They've dipped into their savings, and now they've borrowed aggressively.
There's even talk that if this restructuring fails, Daimler could spin off the Chrysler brand. But Cassessa and other analysts say it's not likely. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
The fashion brand Burberry wants to close a plant in South Wales and move that production to China. This has prompted a series of protests around the world today. Our London correspondent Stephen Beard is with us. Stephen, what's all the fuss about?
There are coordinated demonstrations in London, Paris, New York, Chicago, Las Vegas, and Strasbourg against the closure of Burberry's polo shirt factory in Wales with the loss of 300 jobs. And this has attracted some international celebrity backing too, with the singer Tom Jones, as well as actors Martin Sheen and Emma Thompson. They're all apparently outraged.
They're outraged at 300 jobs?
Yes, I mean, this is the unions involved can hardly believe their good fortune. They've been banging on about the perils of globalization for years, with getting hardly any concern expressed.
And what is the company saying at this point?
They say that they're closing the factory because it's no longer commercially viable. And they insist they are not betraying the brand. And only 10% of the company's production has been outsourced to Asia.
Yeah, I'm just trying to picture people protesting in polo shirts.
Or perhaps trench coats would be more suitable. The whole event is very emotional. They've chosen Valentine's Day for obvious reasons. They've organized a protest in the European Parliament with a giant Valentine's Day card calling on Burberry to stop breaking our hearts.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have made that connection between Valentine's Day and a shirt factory. I'm sorry. I just wouldn't.
I take your point.
Okay, Stephen, our European correspondent, Stephen Beard, thank you.
Okay, Scott.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Online at calvert.com.
Balancing the budget by 2012. President Bush has promised to do it. The Democrats scoff. This week, a bipartisan panel came up with its own plan for balancing the budget. The presidential candidates will be asked about it. Commentator Robert Reich says this is all an exercise in futility.
When Bill Clinton was in the White House and the Republicans ran Congress, it was Republicans who demanded that the federal budget be balanced. That was because they wanted to cut federal spending. Now that George Bush is in the White House and Democrats run Congress, it's Democrats who are outraged by what they consider to be an irresponsibly rosy scenario in the president's new budget, which he claims will be balanced by 2012. Impossible, say the Democrats, who want to roll back his tax cuts for the wealthy. Let's take a time out here and ask ourselves why it's so important to balance the federal budget in the first place. The federal budget is just an accounting convention, and a lousy one at that. It doesn't distinguish between spending to pay off obligations made in the past, spending intended to make us better off today, and spending to make us more productive in the future. Any family knows the difference between past, present, and future, between, say, paying down the mortgage, going on an ocean cruise, or paying college tuition for the kids. You've got to honor past obligations. You live today on the basis of what you can afford to do today, and you should make investments in the future, even if you have to borrow to send the kids to college. But the federal budget is a static account that tells us nothing about past, present, or future. Price supports to protect today's farmers are treated the same way as education and health care for our nation's children, which will shape our future. Social Security surpluses, they're because the post-war boomers are still working, but which will turn into giant liabilities in a few years after the boomers begin to retire, are counted in today's revenues. No one in their right mind should worry about balancing this silly agglomeration. We should worry instead about putting aside enough to deal with past obligations, devoting no more than we can afford to current needs, and making adequate future investments, even if we have to borrow in order to make them.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich now teaches public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. Europeans have really taken to the internet dating thing. A new survey finds that people in France and Britain use online dating sites quite a bit more than Americans do. 22% of French people over 15 compared to 13% of Americans. Bob Ivins is managing director for ComScore Europe, which did the survey. He says there are cultural differences in how things work.
French dating is different. It's a very, very chivalrous country. So, for example, most dating sites in France, only the men are responsible for paying. The women are able to browse and buy, if you will, for free.
The most popular U.S. dating sites, Yahoo Personals and Match.com. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and happy Valentine's Day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.